Hey, good evening, everybody. Thank you very much for tuning in. This is the Malloy Program on a Monday evening. Glad you could make it. And coming up this evening, the second part of last Friday's Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. That will be at the bottom of the second hour of the program today, so stick around for that. It has a very unusual twist. The episode. It is about 7 past the hour. This is the anniversary of an event that occurred 42 years ago in the Mediterranean near the Sinai Peninsula. It was the attack, it's referred to as the attack on the USS Liberty, or the Liberty Incident. Anybody out there familiar with that? I doubt that there are a lot of people who pay too much attention to this sort of thing. Let me explain what it was. The USS Liberty incident was an attack on a neutral United States Navy technical research ship by Israeli jet fighter planes and torpedo boats on June 8, 1967, during the Six-Day War. Now, it was the Six-Day War that reconfigured the boundaries between Israel and Palestine and the occupied territories and has resulted in this 42-year-long occupation. But anyway, the combined air and sea attack by the Israeli Navy and Air Force killed 34 crew members, American crew members. They were naval officers, seamen, and 2 Marines and a civilian. The attack wounded 171 U.S. crew members and damaged the ship severely. The ship was, in fact, in international waters north of the Sinai Peninsula, about 25 miles northwest from the Egyptian city of Arish. During the attack, the Israeli Defense Forces, air and naval forces respectively, misidentified the Liberty as an unknown destroyer. Supporters of Israel's explanation say no credible motive existed for Israel to initiate a surprise attack against an important ally, and the possibility of such mistakes were inherent in the tense atmosphere of the Six-Day War. The U.S. government was concerned about such dangers and had ordered the USS Liberty further away from the shore, but the order was not received in time due to a series of communication failures. In the so-called history report written by the IDF about the attack, it points out that, quote, though the attack on the armed forces of a friendly nation is a most regrettable and painful occurrence, incidents of this kind do occur in wartime, end quote. Now, that is the accepted version of what happened. However, some American government officials and others did not and do not believe the attack was an innocent mistake. They noted that various aircraft, Israeli aircraft, flew over the USS Liberty at regular intervals, some at low altitudes, before the attack, and that the USS Liberty was about twice as large as an Egyptian cargo ship that the Israelis said might have been in the area and confused them. The USS Liberty was designated with Latin letters rather than Arabic letters. It displayed the U.S. flag prominently and was entirely differently configured from the way the Egyptian ship was. Now, proponents who say that the attack by the IDF on this American ship were deliberate. Proponents include the surviving Liberty crewmen and some former U.S. government officials, including then-CIA Director Richard Helms. He said it was deliberate. Secretary of State Dean Rusk said it was deliberate. Admiral Thomas Moorer, former Chief of Naval Operations, said it was deliberate. He was also the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. The Lyndon Johnson administration that was in power then did not publicly dispute Israel's claim that the attack had been nothing more than a disastrous mistake. But internal White House documents obtained from the Lyndon B. Johnson Presidential Library show that the Israelis' explanation of how the mistake had occurred was not believed by members of the Johnson administration. Veterans and intelligence officials who were involved in the incident continue to dispute the official story, claiming Israel's attack on the USS Liberty remains the only major maritime incident in American history not investigated by Congress. About a year after the attack, Israel paid $3.3 million as full payment on behalf of the families of the 34 men killed in the attack. In March of 1969, about a year later, Israel paid a further $3.5 million in compensation to the men who had been wounded. And in 1980, Israel agreed to pay an additional $6 million as settlement for the U.S. government claim of $7 million for material damage to the Liberty itself. On December 17, 1987, the issue was officially closed by the two governments through an exchange of diplomatic notes, and that was the end of it. Now, you remember what occurred during the attack on the USS Cole recently. I say recently in comparison to what occurred in 1967. But this, and there's a book written about it, entitled, I think, The Attack on the USS Liberty. I think that's the name of it. You can do your own research and find out. It makes for a very interesting read. I can remember reading it maybe 15 years ago. The consensus in this country, was the military consensus and the intelligence consensus. And this is back in the day where we had very serious intelligence organization. We were very busy back in the 60s destabilizing governments, overthrowing regimes, and assassinating world leaders. So we had a very active CIA and DIA and so on and so forth back then. And the consensus of all these people was that this was a deliberate attack. However, the political considerations of what was at stake overrode the conclusions of people like Secretary of State Dean Rusk, a warmonger of the highest order, Richard Helms, director of the CIA, another one who was hell-bent on destroying the world in order to stop the commies, Thomas Moore, former naval chief of operations and chairman of the Joint Chiefs. These were all people who, at the height of the Cold War in the 60s, knew damn good and well when they were committing acts of aggression and atrocities and assassinating people. It was shortly after this, shortly before this attack that the head of the South Vietnamese government was assassinated by, obviously by the CIA. I mean, I say obviously, I can't prove it to you any more than I can prove to you which direction is really up. but I know it when I feel it, right? So to claim that these super spooks who were busy at the height of the Cold War didn't know what they were talking about where it concerned the attack on the USS Liberty is to beggar the truth and beat it, drag it out into the woods and beat it to death. So the interesting part to me, though, was the fact that any attempt to investigate what really happened that day has, for the past 42 years, been heavily, immediately, deliberately, totally, and completely suppressed. And it is an investigation, like the investigation into the Bush crime family and into our use of torture and into what we really did in Vietnam and what we really did where it concerns Iran-Contra and on and on and on. These are topics, investigations, that simply will never, ever take place. So, I mention it simply as an historical moment, and I mention it only in passing because I know, just like you do, that an investigation of what occurred that day is, what does Nancy Pelosi say? Off the table. Stay with us. We'll be back.
I'm liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. This is kind of a bizarre story. It's about a week old, maybe 2 weeks, but I missed it the first go around. It's the first case of its type. There's a federal judge in California has ruled that police can forcibly take DNA samples, including drawing blood with a needle, from Americans who have been arrested but not convicted of anything. Now, let that sink in a minute. Remember what happened recently to, and I'm not laughing, except for the sickening irony of everything. It's just getting to that point. But remember the story recently, a couple of months ago, about the people who had gone to the VA for colonoscopies and other treatments, exams, and were treated with unsterilized equipment, some of whom now have developed hepatitis A and AIDS, and a couple other diseases that are transmissible with human body fluids. So think about this. Think about this. Police can forcibly take DNA samples, including drawing blood with a needle, from Americans who have been arrested but not convicted of a crime. That's according to a federal magistrate in California. I think the last, okay, yeah, I know a lot of people say, well, Malloy, they'll, you know, take you to hospital and have it done sterile with sterile equipment. Maybe not. Maybe there will be an EMT on at the police station who will draw the blood. And maybe, just maybe, with all the budget cuts, especially in California, the needles would be possibly reused. I mean, if we're all certain it's not, okay, that's fine if they're all new needles. But you are stopped now for and accused of something by the police. That's what the police do. They say, you, j'accuse. You know, they're the ones that make the first contact with you, the police, in you know, not every instance, but in most instances. So, and it's up to the cops. Okay, we got you. Now we are going to take a DNA sample. And if you say, but I don't want you to, the cops can say, sorry, I'm going to anyway. The magistrate, U.S. judge who did this, Gregory Hollows, his ruling a couple of weeks ago that a federal law allowing DNA samples upon arrest for a felony was constitutional and did not violate the Fourth Amendment's prohibition of unreasonable searches and seizures. You see, that's how you determine whether or not something is or is not within the purview of the U.S. Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Fourth Amendment. You just have a judge make a decision. That's all. Would you call that an activist judge? Would you? Maybe. The judge was appointed by the first Bush, Herbert Walker. And this judge said a couple of weeks ago when he made this ruling that this procedure of jamming a needle into your arm, okay, not jamming, sliding a needle into your arm to take your blood, that procedure was no more invasive or worrisome than fingerprinting or taking a photograph. Excuse me while I scream. Hold on just a minute. Now, see, I do that and I won't say, God damn it. You see what I'm saying? Okay. So, I just said it. So it's no more invasive. Putting a needle into one of your veins and extracting blood is no more invasive or worrisome. I'm going to scream again. No, I'm not. Then fingerprinting or taking a photograph when you are busted and charged with a felony. Now, whether or not you're guilty of the felony is immaterial. Now, right away, just very, very quick, very quick. Who, what group in this country is most likely to be stopped and charged and arrested, charged with a felony, whether guilty or innocent? Think, quickly, quickly. That's right. Dark-skinned people. Huh? Right? Okay? You with me? Anyway, the judge was appointed by Herbert Walker Bush when he was president. The acting U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of California says he's gratified by the ruling. He likes it. Yeah. Lawrence Brown, acting U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of California, said in a statement, "We're very gratified with the ruling." Yeah. Now, all this came about because the second President Bush signed a bill in 2006. You see, father appoints a judge. Son signs a bill in 2006 that said any federal police agency could, quote, collect DNA samples from individuals who are arrested, end quote. Anyone who fails to cooperate is, under federal law, guilty of an additional crime. Guilty. Not charged, but you're immediately guilty if you refuse to allow the sample to be taken. And in addition, federal law and subsequent regulations from the Department of Justice under Bush authorized any means, quote, reasonably necessary to detain, restrain, and collect a DNA sample from an individual who refuses to cooperate in the collection of the sample, end quote. Oh, and by the way, the swab, the cheek swab or the blood test can be outsourced to, quote, private entities, end quote. Just one more fix, Lord, might do the trick. One hell of a price for you to get your kicks. Yeah, yeah. Ooh, that smell. Can't you smell that smell?
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Six before the hour. Regarding the ruling by the U.S. Magistrate Judge Gregory Hollows a couple of weeks ago that police can forcibly take DNA samples, including drawing blood from a needle, from Americans who have been arrested but not convicted of a crime. And the fact that this whole story is dripping with irony, first of all, while other courts have ruled on the constitutionality of DNA sampling after conviction, this is the first case to deal with defendants who've only been accused of a crime. Now, keep in mind, this judge was appointed by George Herbert Walker Bush, and his ruling is in keeping with the kind of attitude that George Herbert Walker Bush had where it concerned individual liberty. And the law, the federal law, was signed in January 2006 by Bush Jr. Now, let me just toss this out for the sake of you right-wingers who listen to this program so you can, notify your friendly right-wing blogger. Oh, did you hear what Malloy said? Let me ask you boys something, you boys and girls. Isn't it amazing how you are always wetting your pants that Democrats are going to invade your personal freedom or the freedom of the country or the Constitution, and it always turns out to be Republicans who do that? Are you people that goddamn brain dead that you can't figure this one out yet? Huh? Now, where do you right-wingers come up with the idea that it's the Democrats who are going to invade your privacy? What, where does that come from? Where do you get the idea that Democrats are going to seize the guns? You know, I had a couple of jerks last week tell me about, or try to tell me about the, there's no, what was the term they were using? They couldn't take their guns where they wanted to, or their freedoms were being restricted. And I wanted to say, you know, you dumb bastards, Obama just signed a bill that, that was, NRA, attached it, had their whores in Congress attach it to one of the, budget rescue bills or so, I don't know, attach it to the stimulus bill that allows people now to take guns into national parks loaded with guns. I mean, what are you people talking about? You can take guns into churches, for Christ's sake. I told you a story last week, last Friday, a church in Louisville, Kentucky that is having a gun raffle. They want you to open carry your gun onto church property. Oh, leave your bullets at home. I mean, what are you right-wing jackasses talking about when you talk about they're taking away our freedom on guns? Are you people really so insanely stupid that you don't see all of this that's been going on that is completely tearing down even reasonable restrictions on where you can take a weapon? Are you people that stupid? Yes, you are. Even more so. Now, where do you get the idea, you dumbasses, that it's the Democrats who are going to do this to you? Well, of course, you get it from Glenn Beck and the Pig Man and Sean Hannity and Michael Savage and the whole stable of hogs that infest right-wing talk radio. Bill O'Reilly and the rest of these people, that's where you get it. But don't you people ever use your own brains that your phony God gave you, huh? Don't you ever use your own powers of observation and deduction and take a look and say, well, let me see here. God damn, every time something like this happens, it's because of a Republican. How do you miss that? I'm just curious. Eh? Come on, you dingleberries. Send me an email about this one. Come on. The way you're always emailing me about, well, you, Malloy, you're the trouble. You're trying to you're supporting people take away our guns. What in the hell are you talking about? The Obama administration just made it easier for you to take guns any place you want to. This is what drives me crazy. This is why I wish I would have stayed in school just a little. I should have done what Mama said. You know, Mama is always right. I should have stayed in school and got a degree that could translate into something rational and sensible other than doing this. But I didn't. Now, here's another one. Another anniversary. We just went full anniversary tonight. 60 years ago today. Orwell's 1984 was published. Yeah, how about that? This is from The Guardian of the UK. 60 years ago today, George Orwell's 1984 was published. And this evening, why, as a matter of fact, it's probably over by now, given the time differential. Anyway, this evening, to mark the anniversary of Orwell's last book before he died, the former head of the Communication Headquarters, a guy named Sir David Pepper. Now, the Government Communications Headquarters in the UK, that's where they do all the domestic spying. That's kind of like our entire government, I guess. But over there, it's called the Government Communications HQ, or GCHQ. Anyway, Sir David Pepper came out of the shadows to tell the BBC's Who's Watching You program, the audience for that program, that it has become necessary for the government in the UK to record all data from phone and internet traffic in the fight against terror. You see, we're worried over here. A court here recently, I think it was last week, ruled that the telecom companies are completely free. They're off the hook now. That little effort to hold them accountable has been flushed down the memory hole or the toilet, depending on how you want to see that. But in the UK, Sir David Pepper slips from the shadows to tell the BBC's Who's Watching You program earlier this evening that it's become necessary for the government to record all data from phone and internet traffic in the fight against terror. Pepper makes a case for the total surveillance of society on the program, apparently, in order to catch the increasingly sophisticated targets. He says, quote, there are plenty of people who would do all they can to make themselves difficult to find. The thing you worry about most is the attack that you haven't seen coming, end quote. Never mind. I certainly couldn't explain anything to Sir David Pepper, the former head of the GCHQ. Now, in the UK, As here, actually, except we are functionally illiterate in this society. In the UK, the unknown enemy is cast very much like the ill-defined threat presented to Oceania in 1984. The threat in 1984 and the threat to the UK now is a pervasive, cunning, and unseen foe that requires total watchfulness, and it follows the sacrifice of the essential right to privacy. Yes. Now, Sergeant Pepper, well, no, actually, it's Sir David Pepper's solution to the problem of tracking terrorist communications is to surveil everything. Everything. Which gives the government their enormous powers and would very likely become subject to the law of function creep. In this country, we call it mission creep. Over there, apparently, they call it function creep. As all these measures usually are. Now, the writer of this, Henry Porter, for The Guardian of the UK, says, last week I reported on how the police national DNA database, well, my goodness, we were just talking about that, the national police DNA database set up to solve crime was now being used in parts of the UK as a crime prevention measure. I'm not sure how that works, but we're doing the same thing here. Those who think of the novel 1984 as a prediction are, of course, in error. No, it's not a training manual either. It is an account of the forces that endanger liberty, most of which can be summed up in a single word, Henry Porter writes, and that word is lies. You see, Orwell offers a political choice between the protections of truth and the slide into expedient falsehoods for the benefit of the rulers. Oh, and the exploitation of the ruled, of course. Now, think Dick Cheney. Think Dick Cheney. Remember, he authorized, promoted, and insisted upon torture techniques developed by the Chinese 60 years ago, not to extract intelligence, not to get information on troop movements and this and that, but rather to get false confessions. That's what drowning, the simulated drowning or the partial drowning, that's what the tortures being used at Guantanamo and God knows where else. That's what those techniques were designed to do. That's why we have the SEER program developed to help American soldiers resist that. But the techniques were designed specifically to get confessions. Given the right amount of pressure, I can get you to confess to having sex with your mother. And I don't care if you are your mother's son or daughter. It doesn't make any difference. More in a minute.
Primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
All right, so it is the 60th anniversary of the publication of 1984. And as Henry Porter, writing for The Guardian of the UK, mentions, the novel is above all subversive. It is a volley against the authoritarian in every personality, It's a polemic against every orthodoxy and an anarchistic blast against every unquestioning conformist. Gee, I think I described every right-winger, every Republican, every brain-dead conservative in America, too. So, anyway, the 60th anniversary of the publication of 1984. And again, every one of the devices that Orwell's novel, Big Brother, used in Orwell's novel to keep track of and utterly destroy the clear thinking of the citizens of Oceania were techniques applied by the Bush crime family against anyone we could sweep up in our net. And anyone in this country. We used terror, the constant threat of terror here over the past 8 years. We became a torture nation. There is an article in what issue? Hold on a minute. It's in The Nation. It is in the June 15th edition of The Nation. I'm tempted to read the whole damn thing on the air. It's by Jonathan Schell about torture and truth. Jonathan Schell, of course, is the person who wrote about Nuclear Winter way back in the 80s. He is he's one of the few social philosophers of any stature or value that we have in this country. But the techniques used, the torture that was so obvious when O'Brien was torturing Winston Smith. It was not to get him to confess not to get him to provide information about where he and Julia, Winston and Julia were sneaking away to have their trysts. O'Brien knew all that. O'Brien knew everything because it was all there. What they didn't like about Winston Smith was that he reserved part of his mind for Julia. And you can't do that. You must love Big Brother. And if you love Big Brother, there's no room to love anybody else. Not the kind of political love, that Big Brother demanded. Or Big Cheney, or Big Bush, or Big Nazi Hitler, you know, whoever. There's no room for anything other than the devotion to the state, the devotion to the leader, dear leader. Think of, Kim Il-crazy in North Korea. Think of Mao. During the Cultural Revolution. So, you know all this. I'm starting to sound lectury, but I'm not trying to be lectury because you know all this stuff. Remember what the goal was. O'Brien's goal was not to wring any information out of Winston Smith. It was to get Winston to agree to the lie. The lie being that truth and reality was whatever the state said it was. The attack on the USS Liberty, it was this. Don't pay attention to the facts. The invasion of Iraq was this. Don't pay attention to the facts. The 9/11 attack on this country was this. Don't pay attention to the facts. Oh, by the way, also on June 8th, today, in 1789, James Madison introduced the Bill of Rights. Isn't that kind of funny? What to do? No, I wish I had solutions. I wish you had solutions. I wish you had solutions that you would email me and say, okay, Malloy, listen, I've been listening to you for a long time with your fears and worries and concerns, and here's the solution. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Who was the author of that, Kathy? What was his name? Douglas, who was that? I don't either. Doug, you don't have to email me. But at the very end of, what was the last novel? Goodbye and Thanks for All the Fish. Or was that what was said? I'm getting all very, very much senior moments tonight. But when the truth of everything was revealed in that series of books, the truth of everything turned out to be the number 42. The number 42. Remember that? Now, I found that profoundly disturbing because number 42 was the number I wore on my jersey when I played high school football. And I thought, oh, my God, that's it? That's the key to everything is the number 42? The key to everything, according to Orwell, according to Bush and Cheney, well, Cheney, the key to everything is to believe the lie. But to believe it after being convinced is not good enough. You have to believe it because it's no longer a lie. You have to believe it because it has been transfigured into the truth. Do you see? Of course you do. Republicans are the ones who fry our liberties. Republicans are the ones who take our guns. Republicans are the ones who say, take a loaded gun into the park if you want to. Or Democrats are the one, or Republic, or no, I forget. Wait a minute, it's over there. You see how all this stuff works? You wind up so damn confused that the average right winger can't even tell you who ordered the only gun grab in modern times, and that was George W. Bush. Provider and licensing. Back 7 past the hour on the Molloy program. You had enough yet, or you want to stick around? Stick around, because in about 30 minutes we're going to have part 2 of Friday night's Mike Molloy Radio Gumshoe episode. Those whom, what is it? What was it? Wait a minute, I got the script right here. Hold on a second. It was whom the gods wish to destroy, they first drive mad. That's coming up in about 30 minutes. So, no, don't go away. You can handle this. This is easy as pie. I found this to be interesting. Not shocking, not surprising, but interesting. Did you know that major U.S., Canadian, and British life and health insurance companies have billions of dollars invested in tobacco companies? Do you not find that, like I did, just to be kind of weird? There's a study that was published, a new study published in the New England Journal of Medicine. And the study's lead author found that at least $4.5 billion in insurance company funds here in the United States are invested in companies whose affiliates produce cigarettes, cigars, and chewing tobacco. Is that called playing both ends against the middle? What's that called? The study's lead author, who's also a faculty member at Harvard Medical School, said, quote, despite calls upon the insurance industry to get out of the tobacco business, the calls by physicians and others, insurers continue to put their profits above people's health. He also said it's clear their top priority is making money, not safeguarding people's well-being, unquote. Well, okay, ready? 3, 2, 1. Duh! Well, of course the insurance company's top priority is making money. Oh, okay. I'm being rather a smart ass. I realized that the lead study, the study's lead author, I should say, was trying to state a very profound truth to his colleagues or whomever reads the New England Journal of Medicine. But the top priority of the health and life and health insurance companies, of course, is making money. I mean, there is, and why wouldn't they be invested in tobacco? Because tobacco shortens the lifespan of, where it concerns health insurance coverage. My goodness, people can, you know, you can have, your doctor can tell you you have lung cancer on Monday and you can be dead on Friday. That saves a lot of resources for the insurance companies. And as you know, tobacco is considered to be a leading cause of lung cancer and heart attacks and strokes and pulmonary disease and other kinds of cancers. According to WHO, the World Health Organization, tobacco is a contributing factor in almost 5.5 million deaths every year globally. And it's going up. Is that globally or is that just in? No, that'd be globally, yeah. The study's lead author also wrote, quote, although investing in tobacco while selling life or health insurance may seem self-defeating, insurance firms have figured out ways to profit from both. Insurers exclude smokers from coverage or, more commonly, charge them higher premiums. So the insurers profit and smokers lose. Don't they? According to the study, Prudential has $264 million invested among three U.S. tobacco companies, Reynolds America and Philip Morris, and it doesn't say the third one. Canadian insurer Sun Life Financial Inc., which sells life, disability, and health insurance, has a stock portfolio with more than $1 billion in tobacco companies, in two tobacco companies, including almost $900 million in Philip Morris. And Prudential PLC, which sells health and disability insurance in the UK, has $1.3 billion in two tobacco companies, including British American Tobacco. The study also details the substantial tobacco investment of the U.S. firms Northwestern Mutual and Massachusetts Mass Mutual Life, and the Scottish firm Standard Life PLC. So there you go. I mean, you got to give the insurance companies credit, don't you? Huh? Health insurance, my ass. It's a business, and it's a very profitable business, because don't forget, the primary function of a health insurance company is to deny your claim. That's their primary function. If there is no way to deny your claim, for example, if you have health insurance, say, as I do, and I have a copay, $10. I have a what is it called? PPO? PPO. You know, I can go pretty much anywhere I want to go to see a physician. I've had the same physician for about 9 years here. And when I go, I know that I'm going to pay a $10 copay. Doesn't make any difference which one of my body orifices he pokes and takes a look in to, or how much blood he draws, or how many machines he hooks me up to. It's going to cost $10. I don't know. I just got to let that settle in for a second. You know, health insurance companies invested heavily in tobacco. There is a new organization, a group called Veterans for Rethinking Afghanistan, or VETS for Rethinking Afghanistan. They are veterans of the war in Afghanistan, not Iraq, maybe Iraq and Afghanistan, but they have to have had military service in a combat zone, and that combat zone has to be Afghanistan. And the organization is called VETS for Rethinking Afghanistan. Now, they are asking the thugs in Washington, D.C. not to sign off on this war supplemental of $96.7 billion, which includes funds for a 21,000 troop escalation in Afghanistan. The veterans are saying, don't do it, please. Jake DeLiberto, a former Marine And one of the leaders of the New Vets group says, quote, boots on the ground are doing more harm than good in Afghanistan. Funding the troop increase will make America less safe, end quote. Do you hear that? This is a combat Marine whose experience was in Afghanistan saying boots on the ground are doing more harm than good in Afghanistan and funding the troop increase will make America less safe. Do you hear that? I certainly do. Marine Corporal Rick Reyes agrees. He says, quote, the United States military is very good at winning wars, but there is no military solution in Afghanistan. There is no military solution in Afghanistan. He goes on to say a regional diplomatic approach is required, and that is not a mission for the military, end quote. Two Marines. Now, Diliberto and Reyes are part of a delegation of veterans who lobbied against the supplemental when it was originally considered by the House back in mid-May. Now, you can get more information about these guys. I've told you about bravenewfilms.org. You can also go to bravenewfoundation.org. Bravenewfoundation.org. This little organization has become very much the center of progressive anti-war thinking and action. Brave New Films, bravenewfoundation.org, right? But you might want to check it out. The group is called Vets for Rethinking Afghanistan, and it is comprised of people who have seen combat in Afghanistan. Two Marines saying the United States military is very good at winning wars, but there is no military solution in Afghanistan. A regional diplomatic approach is what is needed. This is not a mission for the military. Oh, my goodness. I wonder if anybody in Washington, hello, Mr. Obama, is paying any attention to that.
Border and coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
It's 21 past the hour. Don't forget, after the next break, the second half of Friday night's episode of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe, written and produced by Bob Alexander and performed by the Mighty Malloy Radio Players. It's coming up in about 15 minutes. Regarding staying in school, I should have stayed in school, do what your mama says. Prairie 2 writes, if you had stayed in school, you would probably be outsourced by now and your pension stolen. Unless you got an MBA with a minor in sociopathism, then you would be enjoying an 8-digit salary. Or if you really screwed up good, you would be retired with $500 million worth of golden parachute. Yeah, I know. That's true. That's very true. I know a lot of talented people who not talented in the sense of corporate America or the financial services industry or the MBAs or the ABCs or the DEFs or any of that, but just talented people who are very, very bright, very, very creative. A lot of them listen to this program who are not really making a whole lot of money and just kind of like holding on. But just holding on has become such a posture that's almost ingrained into every movement we make. You know, it's like the group I'm talking about, and I put myself in that group. We don't make a lot of money by any means, but holding on has become second nature. it's like breathing. How you doing? Oh, I'm holding on. He told me that 30 years ago. I know. This is interesting. In all the bad news that I usually regale you with, this is from Burlington, Vermont. There's a group of about a dozen Vermont teenagers who go to an after-school program. Their program is different, though. It's focused on gender. It's a 9-week program partially funded by the Burlington, Vermont School District. And it was held at Vermont's Queer Youth Center, and it's called Gendertopia. Now, the kids that go there, they're gay, lesbian, straight. They're students. They discuss a wide range of topics from the characters in the book and movie Twilight. If you're under 20, you know what that is. The only reason I do is because Kathy told me, and she's not under 20. It includes those discussions and taking photos around the city that show the different ways gender is portrayed in popular culture. A 16-year-old junior who's in the program said, quote, most people come into this thinking, oh, there's two genders and two sexualities. People assume it's boy and girl, but it's so much more than that. There's a whole world out there full of different genders, end quote. Now, the program is among the first of its kind to be funded in part with, oh, wait till the right wing hears about this, tax dollars! And a social service organization that assists in funding it, called Outright Vermont. Neither the program nor the school district's participation triggered any objection. The tempered reaction locally to the program shows how far Outright Vermont and the issues it raises, that organization raises, has moved into the mainstream of the social service organizations for kids. And according to the Associated Press, the program was designed to help young people identify the subtle signs used to express gender and how not being aware of those signals can lower self-esteem and possibly lead to an increase in at-risk activities like substance abuse or dropping out of school. The leader of Outright Vermont said, quote, we often see a lot of homophobia or transphobia that happens on the basis of how someone looks. If you're making fun of me because I'm wearing a pink shirt, and that's sort of expressing my femininity, my feminine side, that translates into homophobia. But it has nothing to do with whether I'm straight or whether I'm dating boys or whether I'm dating girls. It has to do with the fact that I'm wearing a pink shirt. End quote. And the school superintendent, Burlington School, Vermont School Superintendent Jean Collins, said no one has objected to the program. She said, quote, the district has been in the forefront of this topic for at least a decade, if not longer. We are very sensitive to celebrating the differences in people and accepting people for who they are and what they bring to the table. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I mean, what? Good on the Burlington, Vermont school district where this is taking place. Good on the superintendent. And Outright Vermont and the kids who attend this, who go to this to find out what they need to find out in order to grow and not become some kind of a screaming freakoid like most people on the right. Most people who listen to right-wing talk radio, these kids are a million light years ahead of them in terms of understanding, awareness, yeah, even compassion. Okay, we're going to take a break here and come back. When we come back, we are going to do part two of episode 6 of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. Stay with us.
So I looked at the scenery. She read her magazine, and the moon rose over an open field. Kathy, I'm lost, I said, though I knew she was sleeping. I'm empty and aching, and I don't know why.
Hey, conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Hey, we have some business to transact with you. In addition to our constant plea about signing up for the podcast, we have opened the store at MikeMalloy.com.
Yeah, go buy gear.
And here is our... We're kind of limited right now, though, aren't we?
I think right now it's just bumper stickers and coffee mugs maybe and T-shirts, but then there's a lot more coming. There's going to be hoodies for babies and baseball caps and
I like those T-shirts.
Tennis shoes.
Who did the design?
I don't know. A lot of say there. I think it says it on there.
Oh, does it?
The Shoemaker's Elves or something. It's very cute.
Cute?
Very, I'm sorry.
Cute?
It's rad. It's rocking. It's bitching. All right. Anyway, go look and
yeah, go to MikeMalloy.com, click where it says store, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
On the main page.
Yeah. And
we're so excited it's finally active.
Yeah, buy some stuff, all right? Especially if you are
Father's Day.
If you are already a podcast subscriber, this would be a good way to supplement the thrill of listening to the Malloy program is to get a T-shirt. I think there's one in there with my picture on it. Yeah, that's a little scary. But anyway, the store is open. So if you are not a podcast subscriber, we would like you to become one. Obviously, it'll cost you about 25 cents a program. It works out on an annual basis. It's $59.40 a year. Whew. And then, of course, the items that you can buy. And right now, it is I think it is T-shirts and bumper stickers, but take a look. It'll be growing. All right, you ready for the second half? If you were listening Friday night, you heard the first half of this episode of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. Here's the second half. It's coming.
It's time once again for Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. Tonight, the thrilling conclusion to From the God's Switch to Destroy, They First Drive Mad. But first, a recap.
Ready?
Anytime.
On your mark, get set, go.
You remember last time Kathy received a mysterious anonymous email that the proposed George W. Bush Presidential Library had already been completed, and a rather complicated explanation of the uncanny valley hypothesis, whereas the closer a robot becomes more human-like, the response from the human being to the robot becomes increasingly negative. Mike, Kathy, and their dog Asta flew to Dallas and found in a seemingly abandoned auditorium on the SMU campus the actual George W. Bush Library, another Republican ripoff to the tune of $500 million. In the theater, they found a coin-operated holographic display of a gigantic George W. Bush head. Mike noted that the two quarters needed to start the machine cost twice as much as one of their podcasts when purchased a year's subscription at MikeMalloy.com. While Mike and Kathy were watching the hologram, Asta slipped his leash, pulled back a curtain, revealing that the big Bush head was being controlled by Dick Cheney himself.
Time.
But I didn't get to the end of the...
You shouldn't have tried to fit the commercial for our podcast in there.
But it was in the script.
We'll just have to start at the last scene from the previous episode. Just skip ahead to your last line.
Let's listen, shall we?
We stole the election twice. Installed a halfwit who on a good day couldn't make a piece of toast without help, and completely looted the treasury for ourselves while engineering the largest transfer of wealth in human history.
Mike, what's wrong with you?
Cheney fell to the stage, and then his head popped off. Kathy, I think we should exit stage left right now.
Asta, come here, boy.
Asta was sniffing around the curtain on the right. He tugged at the cloth, pulling the curtain back to reveal...
Mike, look out!
Good God, it's... Darth Vader? You have got to be kidding me.
He controlled Bush, I controlled him. I wouldn't take this situation lightly if I were you.
He took out his Star Wars laser sword.
It's called a lightsaber.
Hey, this is voiceover narration, not dialogue.
I dislike imprecision regardless of script direction.
Will you two get on with it?
Gladly. Now you two, pick up that dog and walk ahead of me. We're going to have a little
chat.
Brandishing his lightsaber, Chaney forced us down a hallway into what appeared to be a fully outfitted commercial kitchen. What's with the Halloween getup? Trick-or-treating early this year?
During the 70s, I began having some health issues, if you will. As Jerry Ford's chief of staff, I had access to the latest Defense Department technology, and I volunteered to become this country's first cyborg. Jerry loved the film American Graffiti and wanted to meet George Lucas, so I arranged a special screening of the film at the White House. Lucas wandered into my office by mistake. I guess I made quite an impression on him.
But we've seen you in public as a congressman, secretary of defense, vice president.
I was the first cyborg. What you have been seeing all these years have been the first androids. Robots, if you will. I became the CEO of Halliburton because everyone expects a corporation to be run by a heartless, soulless android. But alas, I can never achieve the presidency because the people instinctively are repelled by...
Oh no, you can't pull that uncanny valley crap to explain away your 11% approval rating. People hate you because you're a monster whose policies have caused death and destruction all over the planet.
All right, I'll give you that. But remember, Mitt Romney spent over $35 million of his own money, and he still couldn't beat McCain in the primaries.
Romney lost to McCain because... Wait just a second. Romney's a robot?
Excuse me, Mike, but duh.
In 2012, every Republican vying for the presidency will be one of our androids.
But you yourself said that people instinctively won't vote for robots.
Correct. Most people won't, but other robots will.
What are you saying? Are you mad?
Why?
Yeah, I know. Dumb question.
We will always control one-third of the vote. You people represent another third. So in order to win, we simply need to control a little over half of the remaining third. A fraction over one-sixth. And now, as quickly as we can manufacture them, our robots are infiltrating human society. By the next election, with Fox News and our robots, we will be in the majority again. But all this talk has made me hungry. Peckish, if you will. For my first course, I found that nothing quite whets the appetite like a nice big bowl of puppy tartare.
Mike, is he serious?
And the second course?
You know the old saying, for a breakfast of ham and eggs, the chicken was involved, but the pig was committed. And when it comes to joining me for dinner, you two are definitely committed.
I can't believe this. On top of everything else, you're a cannibal?
No. Cannibalism is when you eat your own species. What makes you think I'm human?
The Darth Chaney lunged at Kathy with Asta in her arms.
Mike, no!
Nice doggy.
I turned and saw on the counter behind me what could be our only chance to get out of here alive. As Chaney grabbed for Asta, I stepped back and...
What do you think you're doing?
Just a little test. Is your pacemaker and whatever the hell else you've got in there affected by microwave ovens?
No.
I savagely twisted the knobs on three microwave ovens to full power. Chaney fell to the floor, and then his head popped off.
Mike, is he...
I sure hope so. Come on, Kathy, let's get out of here. You too. We went back home and monitored the talking head shows on Fox. Sure enough, within a week, Chaney was back on the circuit. Knowing what I know now, I'll take a closer look at anyone I hear mindlessly repeating Republican talking points. Are they real or Memorex? Somebody's got to figure it out. I guess that's my job. Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
Go.
Be sure to tune in next time for another thrill-packed adventure when Mike has a neocon nightmare.
Time.
And there you have it. The second half, wasn't that worth just waiting with great anticipation over the entire weekend? Huh?
So as I was saying, there's t-shirts, and soon there'll be baseball caps, maybe even keychains. I don't know what else, but the Malloy Store.
Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe is written and produced by Bob Alexander and performed by the Mighty Malloy Radio Players. Oh, my. Regarding the thing I just shared with you about the kids in the school district in Burlington, Vermont, who have an opportunity to get together and talk about gender, got an email here from Kelly, who listens on AM 1090. That is that in Seattle? Yeah, I think it. Yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. I just, you know. Kelly writes, just getting off work, tuned to hear your comments about transgendered children. This is last Friday, I believe. And I wanted to say thank you, Mike. I'm a 23-year-old transgendered woman, and what you said really gave me hope. Many who are transgendered grow up being truly alone, fear of being found out, fear of rejection, and fear of losing your family. And even if you do find the courage to come out to those closest to you, the words are hard to say. Dad, I want to be a girl, or Mom, I'm a boy. There isn't always the understanding that people get when they come out as gay. My father's response is one that still hurts to this day, even 9 years later. He said, "It's all right with me that you're gay. You'll always be my son." So much for coming out as a girl. There are no positive role models when you're growing up as transgendered. There are no people on TV, radio, government, or anywhere in public life that say you can have a normal life. If you are able to relate to anyone like me, you can have a normal life. And if you are transgender, about all I ever saw growing up was Jerry Springer guests and never being able to relate to anyone like me because they were more screwed up than I was. And you ask yourself, am I really going to end up like that? And it fills you with a sense of hopelessness that you don't truly have anyone to talk to comfort you and say, yes, you can truly be yourself in this world. And people will respect you for the content of your heart. Because once people know of your past, you stop being a girl in their eyes, or you're less of a man, but more of a freak, a sideshow attraction, a not person. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Dick is a killer. Vice President Cheney, he showed the way. Terrified and innocent, the desire growing stronger.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. I wanted to finish this email from Kelly, who listens at AM 1090 in Seattle, a 23-year-old transgendered woman, and how difficult it is to have transgendered sexuality as part of your reality. In the first part of the letter, she lays out some of the frustrations, and she says, "And I haven't even touched the horrors of things like puberty or trying to survive the high school locker room. Many like me don't make it to adulthood, and for them, suicide is far less painful than the rejection they feel inside and out. I count my blessings that most of my family has rallied around me, and I'm now accepted as a woman in my life, but still I feel the pain of those who never felt the support of their parents, whose teachers never stopped the bullying, whose bosses never said, 'This stops now.' 2 years ago, my sister took a child psychology class in high school with a young girl who is transgendered. In the class, as one of the preschool kids. Her parents supported her, and it was really really warmed my sister's heart to see how truly happy the little girl was, accepted as she was, allowed to dress as she wanted, play with the toys she wanted, and be herself, all without the fear of rejection. Someday it may seem like it is a long way to go for progress, but if we can change just one life at a time, maybe someday there won't be another child who sees their only salvation in the barrel of a gun. Or at a window ledge." Kelly. Yeah, we really are kind of parochial, aren't we, in our views, and kind of strictured and sewn up and buttoned down in, there are boys and there are girls and then there are queers, rather than understanding that all sorts of permutations and changes and people sliding back and forth on a continuum, that all that exists. Most of us in this country were brought up very rigidly to accept certain identities and certain roles, and it's very difficult to break free from that under the best of circumstances. But when you have religious psychopaths screaming about this sort of topic, screaming about, first of all, screaming into little kids' heads from day one that It was woman who caused all the problems on earth. And that men better not lie with men, and that, you know, just oh my God. And I don't know, sometimes I think about the Malloy version of Brave New World, where instead of altering the zygotes to be alphas and bravos and what were they, alphas? No, alphas and alpha plus, and then you had, yeah, bravos. What was C, Charlie? No, that really, deltas and epsilons and just write down the old radio code, huh? And alpha pluses, instead of doing that, in Malloy's Brave New World, people would have their bigotry and prejudice and fear gene removed. You know, no fear. What was that? Was that a Nike slogan for a while? Was that no fear? Or was that some kind of sport drink? No fear. Speaking of which, a suspect is facing federal charges for allegedly bringing four weapons to the Veterans Affairs Medical Center in Palo Alto, California. This guy parked his van in the parking lot of the hospital at about 3:30 in the morning, June 2nd, then got out while carrying a 12-gauge shotgun, 22 caliber semi-automatic rifle, a 44 Magnum pistol, and a 9mm pistol. The guy walked to a grassy median in the main thoroughfare of the hospital, displayed the two rifles in a tripod fashion, and placed the pistols on the surrounding ground in plain view of all incoming and outgoing traffic to the medical center, according to Special Agent James So-and-so of the Veterans Affairs Office, Inspector General. The man then lay down in a sleeping bag next to the guns until he was detained by Veterans Affairs police around 6:30 a.m. He has been charged with possession of firearms and dangerous weapons at a federal facility. He was released last Tuesday on $50,000 bond. Now, what do you think? Do you suppose this man might need help rather than being busted and charged with crimes? Do you suppose he has something in his mind about his service in the military? Huh? What do you think? Yeah, me too. Guns. But see, it's not fair, is it? It says he's been charged with possession of firearms and dangerous weapons at a federal facility. Well, come on, NRA. You got to bring this nonsense to an end. I mean, my God, who goes to Veterans Affairs hospitals? Ding, ding, ding. That's right, veterans. If anybody should have the right to carry a weapon, it ought to be a veteran, right? Didn't they fight for the Second Amendment? Right? Well, they might be a little bit unbalanced, suffering a little bit from PTSD, but what the hell, they have that Second Amendment right to carry a weapon, right? Watch how this case develops into a new cause for the NRA. Well, why shouldn't veterans be allowed to carry a weapon onto the grounds of the Veterans Affairs Hospital? I mean, that certainly makes sense to us here at the NRA. These boys went through hell to have the right to carry a gun and to make sure you had a right to carry a gun, right? What? They might be a little bit deranged as a result of their combat experience. Well, that's no reason to deny their Second Amendment rights, is it? You know that's going to happen, don't you? Your phone calls when we come back. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour on the Molloy program. The phone number here is 877-996-2556. So jump in and join us if you are so inclined. This kind of caught my eye, too. Reactionary radio host. This is from John Byrne at Raw Story. Reactionary radio host and white supremacist Hal Turner was taken into custody last Wednesday night after remarks urging Catholics to, quote, take up arms, end quote, against two Connecticut lawmakers and a state ethics official over legislation being considered in the state legislature regarding the church. Connecticut Capitol Police got a warrant for Hal Turner's arrest, and according to the Hartford Courant, this: Turner, who has been identified as a white supremacist and anti-Semite by several anti-racism groups, hosts an internet radio program and with an associated blog. On Tuesday, the blog included a post that promised to release the home addresses of State Representative Michael Lawler, State Senator Andrew McDonald, and Thomas Jones of the State Ethics Office. Capitol Police Chief Michael Fallon said in an email announcing the warrant, quote, Mr. Turner's comments are above and beyond the threshold of free speech. He is inciting others through his website to commit acts of violence and has created fear and alarm. He should be held accountable for his conduct, end quote. The remarks on the blog were a reaction to the recent controversy over a bill that would have changed the way the Roman Catholic Church is governed, taking power away from church officials and turning it over to lay members. It was pulled in mid-March following an outcry from Catholics across the state and questions about its constitutionality. And all that's well and good, except Hal Turner, finally, apparently, is one of these nutcases who actually suggested that Catholics take up arms and go kill people. And Hal Turner, of course, used to be a regular on Sean Hannity's radio show. When Hannity said he didn't know the guy or didn't have an association with Turner earlier this year, Turner wrote, quote, I was quite disappointed when Sean Hannity first tried to say he didn't know me and then went on to say that I ran some Senate campaign in New Jersey. In fact, Sean Hannity does know me, and we were quite friendly for a number of years. When Hannity took over Bob Grant's spot on WABC in New York City, I was a well-known, regular, and welcome caller to his show. Through those calls, Sean and I got to know each other a bit, and at some point, I can't exactly remember when, Sean gave me the secret guest call-in number at WABC so that my calls could always get on the air. Sean Hannity is as bad as O'Reilly or Limbaugh or the rest of these pigs. Hannity has no more respect for free speech than he does for a woman's right to privacy. He pretends like he does so that he can agitate borderline psychopaths like Hal Turner to pick up weapons and go, or suggest to other people pick up weapons and go kill folks. Sean Hannity needs to be removed from the air because he's a clear and present danger. And he works for a terrorist organization, the Fox News organization, which is clearly a terrorist organization. Clearly. You think anything will happen? Hell no. Oh, and by the way, before we come to your calls, remember the group in, was it New Jersey? These four guys were busted, it was about a week or 10 days ago. You know, a terror plot. Remember? They were busted because they thought they were going to pick up weapons and get some money, when in fact the whole thing was set up by the FBI to entice these four Americans into what the FBI insists is terror activities. Well, over at is it Crooks and Liars? Or I think it's Crooks and Liars. I'm not sure which one it is. Talk about a terror plot. You got your faux jihad. You got your inadequate health insurance, and you got an FBI informant who supplied a motive. Now, I wonder how they thought any of this would play in court. I mean, we were planning to try these people, yes, So here's the story. Lord McWilliams, who is 20, has a deadly liver disease. He says my insurance wasn't good enough. So his brother, David Williams, wanted money to speed up the process, according to McWilliams, because he said Medicaid only goes so far. And the brother dismissed as crazy federal accusations that Williams is a Jew hater who wanted to wage jihad. McWilliams said the FBI informant who lured his brother and three other hapless petty criminals into a plot to blow up synagogues and shoot down a plane promised enough money to take care of his transplant. McWilliams said, my brother told me, don't worry, when you go to the doctor, tell them you got the money. McWilliams, who has already had his spleen removed, said his brother told him he would have $20,000 for the operation. The mother, Elizabeth McWilliams, said her older son had told her he would be able to give her a wad of cash Thursday, which was the day after the terrorist plot was to have been carried out. His mother said he was a sweet, loving kid. He took his brother's illness worse than I did. The sick brother, McWilliams, said the informant, who often drove his brother to the hospital to visit, even promised to take him to Universal Studios when he was well again. The sick brother said he said I didn't have to pay for anything. Now, federal prosecutors say that the brother, Williams, who's 28, James Cromides, 44, Laguerre Payne, who's 27, and Anta Williams, who's 32, all of upstate Newburgh, were militant Muslims caught on tape rallying or railing against Jews and plotting to blow up Jewish temples. They were arrested last Wednesday while planning what they thought were plastic explosives outside two Riverdale synagogues. They also had a Stinger missile. It was phony, supplied by the FBI, with which they allegedly planned to shoot down a military plane. Family and friends say the four were down on their luck ex-cons who apparently thought they would be paid by the FBI informant. I'm sorry to laugh. In dozens of interviews around Newburgh, no one can remember hearing any of the four talk of Jews or jihad. They had converted to Islam in prison, but they drank beer, ate pork, and rarely prayed, family members said. So what's worse, a healthcare system where someone is so desperate he'd blow up buildings to pay for his brother's treatment, or an FBI that thinks nothing of setting people up so they can claim they caught some terrorists? Man, what about the four guys from Liberty City, Miami, who were accused of plotting to blow up the Sears Tower? Whatever happened to those guys? Oh, well. Robin is driving in Oregon, listening on
Mike,
Sirius.
Mike, how are you doing tonight?
Doing fine. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. Slight delay on the shipment. This is your fishmonger.
the smoked salmon dude.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I couldn't get the address before, you know, the post office closed. But
no problem.
When I get back this week, it'll be on the way.
Thank you.
Two things. One, can we make a new rule?
Let's hear it.
When a right winger calls in, he must have an IQ equivalent to at least three times his age.
Well, I've tried that, and you know, it doesn't
it's
seem
hard to find. I know
it just doesn't seem to work.
And GM, good heavens! You remember the movie Who Killed the Electric Car?
Yes, I never saw it, but I do remember it. Yes.
Okay, this car. That I think they leased it to 100 people in the L.A. area. I can't remember just what the number was.
Uh-huh.
For 2 years. It was a plug-in, completely electric, no hybrid.
Right.
Did 0 to 60 in either 3 or 5 seconds, just incredibly quick, and had a 200-mile range.
Mm-hmm.
200 miles.
Yeah, I remember.
And it would charge up in a matter of 2 or 3 hours.
Right, right.
GM's just dying because of, you know, everything going on, but they would take the automotive world by storm if they mass-produced that car.
Yeah, they would. Plus, it would have a powerful positive effect on not just the environment, but on, I think, on how people related to their, you know, to their automobiles. Hey, Robin, I got to leave you there. Thanks, pal. Appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back.
Into the light, baby, dance, fade away.
overcome 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Well, it may not be free, but it's only a quarter. A quarter of a show. Come on, y'all. We need you to sign up for the podcasts. $59.30 a year or $7.95 a month, but you don't want to do the monthly thing, do you? You can. From the Democracy Now! Website, this information from last week, Obama, President Obama nominated a guy to head a, or to a top Homeland Security position. His name is Philip Mudd. And you got to wonder. I'm sure Obama didn't know this. Maybe he did. But this guy had been linked to spying on Muslims. He also had been linked to CIA torture, as well as other activities. Mudd was nominated to become Secretary of Intelligence and Analysis at Homeland Security under the Bush administration. This guy, Philip Mudd, helped organize an FBI program that sifted through customer data collected by San Francisco area grocery stores in 2005 and 2006, hoping that sales records of Middle Eastern food would lead to Iranian secret agents. Jesus Christ! Ah, in addition, a congressional aide told the Associated Press that Philip Mudd had direct knowledge of the torture of foreign prisoners while serving as deputy director of the CIA's Office of Terrorism Analysis. And when this went up at Democracy Now!, it said Mudd's confirmation hearing is expected next week. That would be this week. Over the weekend, he withdrew. He pulled his name, Philip Mudd. Did Obama know who he was nominating? Is there a way, seriously now, to look at the grocery store computer list of what people buy in San Francisco area grocery stores, to determine who among the purchasers might be an Iranian American terrorist? Is there a way to do that? Oh my God. Well, there must be, right? It's not all madness, is it? There must be a way in San Francisco where you can look at the computer records of what customer 14397-J2Q, or however they're identified with their little, like we have these cards that we use when we go to Kroger grocery stores here, and you know, you get discounts. And I know that somewhere there's a giant computer that knows everything that Kathy and or I have bought at a Kroger store for the past 15 years. And you know what my attitude is? A big middle finger. I couldn't care less. One of the reasons we use the card is because every time we get $100 worth of groceries on it in a month, we go to the Kroger gas station and get 10 cents a gallon off. Are you kidding me? Of course we're going to do it. And I don't care. Somebody wants to shuffle through my store records of what I bought and find out what kind of peanut butter or bathroom tissue or what else do the radishes or cheese or breakfast cereal. Like, have at it, boys and girls. If this is how you earn your federal spy dollars, go for it. But be careful. One time I bought some celery and I was fully intending to turn it into celery-like missiles and attack, a jet flying overhead. Jesus God. It's just unbelievable, isn't it? No, it's very believable. Jonathan is in Burlington, Vermont.
Yeah, hi, Mike.
Hi, Jonathan.
How are you? And it actually makes perfect sense to me because good Americans only buy hamburgers, hot dogs, and fried chicken.
That's true.
Never sample Arabian or Persian
food.
Well,
I bought some New Zealand cheese last week.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I bought Canadian what? Canadian something. Canadian yogurt?
I don't know. You're really in trouble.
Well, yeah, I am.
Listen, I hope you got my email about how foolish I felt about the incorrect information I disseminated on your program about Dreyfus. Dreyfus was not executed as I had contended. Dreyfus was exonerated after languishing on Devil's Island for a while.
Yeah, well, that's okay.
Okay, but the essential point was that the original Zionists were impressed by the fact that even though he was from such an assimilated, patriotic French family, much of the nation had turned on him and framed him because of his Jewish background. But something you said tonight about also the kids in Burlington, I'm really happy to hear that.
Yeah, hey, hold on a second. I got to do a break here, and we'll come back and talk about the kids in Burlington since you live there, or you live in Vermont. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
Loud, proud, progressive talk. It's Mike Malone.
It's about 25 before the hour. We're talking with Jonathan in Burlington, Vermont. Okay, you were going to talk about the school in the schools of Vermont.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say I was really happy to hear that it may be a formal or official program that was responsible for what I've observed. I mean, certainly not responsible for it in every kid, but I find, and when I say kids, I mean people from little kids to me, 36. I mean, I'm 49 now, and I don't know. I'll give it all the way through to the official age you're supposed to be married to, but married by, biblically. You're supposed to be married by 36, or you're out of the grace of God, according to the Old Testament. those people that in that age group are just so much, as they would say, more chill about gayness, about race, about religion, just everything, than the generation that I am so disappointed in, the baby boom generation, which was all peace, love, dove. Let's take care of each other at Woodstock. I think you did a little thing about that, which was wonderful at the time, but it seems 10 or 12 years later, they kind of said, screw it. There's money if we don't take care of each other, so let's go for that. I'm just really disappointed in my own generation and a little bit older, the baby boom, but whatever. They're disappointed in me, a lot of them. But the kids are just to offer a lot of hope, because they're just, those things don't matter to them. Surprisingly, people.
Rather than say they don't matter, maybe it's they keep things in the proper perspective. I would hope so. Thanks, Jonathan. I appreciate you checking in. Regarding looking at the grocery store lists of what people buy in San Francisco to find the Iranian terrorist. Jesus God, I don't believe I'm doing this. Here you go. Here's a sample. Mike sent this in, a sample of terrorist food. It says, one of the distinctions of the Iranian cuisine is the subtlety of the seasonings. The traditional Iranian politeness even extends to the limiting of garlic in cookery so as not to offend others. Onions and garlic are used only with discretion, but cinnamon, cloves, cardamom, saffron, paprika, nutmeg, turmeric, and dill are used with artistry, never overpowering, always gently enhancing the main ingredients. To balance the natural sweetness of fruit and dried fruits, of fresh and dried fruits, used so often in cookery, the Iranian cook adds judicious amounts of tartness by using one of the following. Verjuice, the sour juice of unripe grapes, lemon or lime juice, strips of dried limes, dried tangerine peel or tamarind, powdered sumac, with its chili powder appearance and sour taste, is a seasoning often used for broiled meats. Pomegranate juice and seeds are often used both for color and tartness. So there you go. I guess if you're Philip Mudd, who was almost Barack Obama's appointee to Homeland Security, if you are Philip Mudd and you are working for George Bush out in San Francisco looking for Iranian terrorists by means of what they buy at the grocery store, this is what you look for. Oh, my God. An Iranian terrorist would buy cinnamon, cloves, cardamom, saffron, paprika, nutmeg, turmeric, and dill. We live in a crazy house. Are you aware of that, Truth Seeker? We live in a nut house. No offense to the really mentally insane or challenged. We do. We live in crazy land where people like Bush or Cheney or just name one or seven or 50 are in charge of sending someone to check computer records of what potential Iranian terrorists buy at a grocery store in, in San Francisco. Oh my God. What if it's a non-Iranian? What if it's an Irish person who wants to cook Iranian food? Did you ever think of that? What if it's a Russian person married to an Iranian and the Russian person wants to give the Iranian spouse a little treat?
Given the fact that it seems like most of our terrorists are homegrown and of the redneck variety, yeah. I think they better track beer nuts, pork rinds,
Crisco,
Pabst Blue Ribbon, lard,
cans of Crisco.
Yeah, and, you know, possum bites and... that's the terrorist food.
Frozen cheese grits.
Yeah, exactly. What did Timothy McVeigh eat? What did this rotor freak who likes to go murder abortion doctors, what did he eat? Well, what are the people that go blow up the Unitarian Universalist Church eat? I bet it wasn't tamarind.
I bet it wasn't.
I bet it wasn't cloves.
I bet it wasn't.
Or chili leaves. Curry leaves.
Yeah, they ought to keep close tabs on people who buy inordinate amounts of mayonnaise.
That'd be you.
That'd be me.
But you're already on the list. They've got your name without the mayonnaise.
Oh my God. Yeah, they do. They definitely do. And Mark is calling from Trenton, New Jersey, listening on XM. Hey, Mark.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Sure.
I just wanted to slightly comment on one thing earlier that the previous caller happened to have mentioned. This is just a side. The previous caller happened to have mentioned that the Old Testament comments that a person must get married before the age of 36.
Yeah.
And that is not anywhere in the Old Testament.
Oh, who cares? I mean, I frankly don't give a damn. You know, somebody wants to say that, let them say it. If somebody else wants to say it's not there, let them say it. I couldn't care less. What'd you really call about, Mark?
Earlier you commented that Sean Hannity's slight acquaintance with Hal Turner,
yeah,
the white supremacist, was a horrendous acquaintance. And I just wanted
No, that's not what I said at all. What I said was Sean Hannity had as a frequent guest, and one of his friends was a white supremacist who likes to kill Jews named Hal Turner. And right. Hal Turner's been busted, and Sean Hannity, because Sean Hannity is a Class A coward, Sean Hannity immediately starts backpedaling, saying, I didn't know him. That's what I said.
Right. I just wanted to open with, I am actually a registered independent, although I am have conservative right views. And
so what?
Hopefully my IQ is above 3 times.
Wait a second, Mark. Why are you calling my radio program telling me your political registration and your IQ? Obviously, you're going someplace that I think my audience would find excruciatingly boring. So, have a nice evening, okay? I mean, go away, Mark.
Didn't the story you report say that Hal Turner had like a special back number for Sean Hannity
so
he could get on anytime?
Yeah.
And then Hannity backpedaled faster than he did out of the waterboarding.
Oh, sure. Hannity is your typical right winger. He is first and foremost a coward. He is secondly a liar. Every single right winger in media absolutely has those two aspects that are dominant in their lives. They are first, last, and always they are cowards. And they are second, next to last, and also always liars. It is a genetic predisposition in right-wingers. And it's not just right-wingers in media. I have found that every single right-winger that I have ever come in contact with, either directly or through this radio program or when I worked at CNN or when I wrote for a newspaper, every single one that I have ever come in contact with, whether they were prominent like Newt Gingrich or just common average every day, I'm a Reagan Democrat, but I'm independent now. They are first, last, and always cowards. And secondly, liars. I have yet to meet a right winger or a conservative or a Bush supporter who does not fit that profile. So yeah, I profile white males and let them open their mouths for longer than 42 seconds. And I know exactly where they're coming from. And if they start espousing this right-wing crapola, I know immediately that all I have to do is sneak up behind them and go, boo! And they'll jump right out of their own asses and run screaming into the bushes. And I also know that if I say, hi, what's your name? And he says, Bob, he's a liar. They are cowards and they are liars. That's how they are defined. We'll be right back. Thanks to the crew. Ben Birch is still our technical advisor. Sharon Gordy is still our military affairs correspondent. Our ethical advisors are still Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf. And our economic advisor is still Bruce Enberg. Catherine Bay still engineers and executive produces this program. No matter what we do, we just can't seem to drive them away. It's about 9 before the hour. Ellen is calling from Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Ellen.
Hey, Hey, Mike, I just am in awe of the work that you folks all do.
Well, thanks. That's very kind. We definitely have fun doing it.
I have a trick question for you, and I just wanted to tell you the way to find a Iranian terrorist in San Francisco, obviously,
is
that he or she buys too much garlic.
I thought that would be an Irish or...
No, because they're not afraid of offending anyone.
Okay.
Now you know.
Shit-a-boom.
Okay, so what's the difference between two American journalists held in North Korea on terrorism charges and a Pakistani taxi driver in Guantanamo?
The two American journalists in China or in North Korea are not tortured?
Okay. Well, the answer is probably going to be when somebody, some big important American like Al Gore or Mike Governor Richardson shows up, and all they have to say is, when they're trying to get these folks released, is Guantanamo, Guantanamo. I mean, we're just as guilty.
Well, that's true. It's going to be extremely difficult given the craziness that's going on in North Korea. Not that there isn't constant craziness, but the crazy season seems to ebb and flow with the health of whoever the dear leader is. And this current dear leader is about to be pushing up daisies and being eaten alive somehow by worms. So they go crazy. They grab a couple of American journalists and put them on trial, sentence them to 12 years for, I don't know, for walking across a line or for, let's see, I think they were convicted of inciting the North Korean people. What did they do, hold a pork chop in front of them and say, jump, jump? You know, and so 12 years, Al Gore is going to go over there, or like you said, Governor Richardson are going to go over there and try to get these people released, and probably will. I would imagine that the North Koreans are going to use this as a gesture of their tremendous respect for human life and for the dignity of man, in this case, to women, because they take everything literally. And it's going to be a grand gesture by the dear leader as he is about to become worm food. And I would imagine these two women will be released. Remember what happened to the woman who was charged in Iran after her trial. She was freed, right?
Right.
So this is the hallmark of totalitarian regimes. They put the person on trial, they convict them, and then they are able to be talked into releasing them. We, on the other hand, you see, identify our captives as, these are the worst of the worst. They are the most dangerous people on earth. We cannot let them go. What we may have to do is execute all of them because they are so dangerous. Right?
Right.
There is a big difference. And isn't it funny that the totalitarian regimes are the ones who usually wind up saying, oh, okay, we were just kidding, we'll let them go.
Right.
I know.
So speaking of torture,
yeah.
If there was ever a 24 scenario, it's this Scott Roeder, the murderer, the assassin of George Tiller.
Right.
Who has said... There is a plan. There, more people are going to die, and I know who's going to be doing it. He hasn't exactly said that, but he has said there is a plan. More people are going to die.
Right. Well, he needs to be tortured, doesn't
he? That's right.
What are we waiting for?
Exactly.
He needs to be.
He knows the names and the numbers, and he would obviously need to be tortured to give him up.
Well, according to Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and George Bush and Dick Cheney, he should be sent immediately to Egypt to kind of clean out the spoor of Barack Obama giving his speech there. He should be sent immediately to Egypt, where the Egyptian secret police can start torturing Mr. Roeder or Raider or Reader, whatever the hell his name is, and get this information. Mm-hmm. I think if there were consistency in But you see, in this country, someone who commits murder of a physician who provides a desperately needed medical procedure, the killer is not a terrorist. He just simply someone acting on his conscience. And, of course, he'll have to be tried now and probably sentenced. Well, I don't even know if they have the death penalty in Kansas. They probably do. At least they did when the Clutter family was murdered. But it's just... I know what you're saying, Alan, and it is as maddening to me as it is to you. This is insanity. It's all insanity. You do understand that?
I do.
Okay.
I do, and thank you again for your work.
All right, Alan, thank you. I appreciate you checking in. Thank you very much. Yeah, why isn't this man... He's stated categorically, hasn't he, that he knows of all sorts of plots, all sorts of actions that are going to take place this summer. The streets are going to run with the blood of the Christ-hating abortionists, and there will be glory in heaven when they are gunned down. I mean, this guy is a real crazy man. And probably needs to be approached through the wonderful world of torture rather than, according to Cheney, right? So what's the delay? Seriously. I'll see you tomorrow night. Huh? Oh, don't forget to stop by MikeMalloy.com and maybe buy something. But for heaven's sake, sign up for the podcast, right? Take care. I'll see you tomorrow night. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.